Hi, I'm Aisha Harris, and you're listening to the Slate Spoiler Special. And this week we are talking about Dear White People, the highly anticipated film by first-time director Justin Simien. And joining with me today is Tanner Colby, author of Some of My Best Friends Are Black. Hi, Tanner.
Hi, Aisha.
How's it going?
It's going great.
Great. And Dear White People, as I mentioned earlier, is probably one of the most anticipated films of this year and of this season. It premiered at Sundance earlier this year in January and wound up winning the best, I think...
Breakthrough Talent,
that's correct.
Yes.
For director Justin Simien. And it's gotten a lot of buzz. It's had a really big viral campaign.
It started even before the movie was made. It started off on Twitter with the teaser trailer, and it's just been much buzzed about for a long time.
Yeah, it actually started as a Twitter account,
right.
Apparently. Dear White People, the same title, and kind of became this idea that Justin Simien had and turned into this film. So let's talk a little bit about it.
Sure. Where do you want to start?
First, what were your first impressions? Like, did it live up to your anticipation or your expectations of what it is? And
well, my anticipations were slightly colored by the fact that I was wondering what he was going to do with the phrase "Dear White People,"
mm-hmm.
which I wasn't that familiar with the Twitter account and what he did in launching it. And so I was wondering, is he going to like parody the whole idea of Dear White People, or is there going to be like a sincere Dear White People thing? Because the whole time I was researching my book, I would like read The Root and Ebony and The Griot and all these things all the time just to edify myself. And every like 2 months, it was like constant. There'd be another article, Dear White People or mm-hmm. Dear White America. It was this trope that just got played again and again. And I was like, who are you writing to? You're writing a Dear White People column on ebony.com. And then I'd sort of read through them, and they were invariably sort of preachy and listen up white folks and just, you know, not. I didn't very well taper off like halfway through and not finish them. And it's sort of, it's the same, it's the equivalent of what Bill O'Reilly does on Fox News, where he lectures the young gangster rappers about, you know, their four-letter words and their baggy
right.
jeans. It was like, Bill, who are you talking to? What 18-year-old black kids are watching the No Spin Zone on Fox News? And of course, Bill O'Reilly is performing for old white people, and the people writing these Dear White People columns are performing for a black audience. They're not actually trying to communicate to white people.
Well, do you think that's actually the case with, at least with the movie anyway?
Well, that was my question is he going to sort of get inside the nature of this whole Dear White People idea, or is it just going to be, and he did, he sort of like, he tackled the idea that for this young woman, Sam White, who's this, you know, biracial girl from the suburbs who's trying to find her identity. This whole Dear White People thing is very much a, you know, somewhat of posturing in terms of like trying to find herself. And it's a bit of a performance put on. And then by the end of the movie, and of course here we're spoiling the end, you know, she does all these Dear White People, you know, admonitions, Dear White People, stop touching my hair, Dear White People, the number of black friends you need is now raised to 2.
And just to clarify, it's set on a college campus for those
right.
who don't know.
Yeah.
And the Twitter account from real life is transposed into Sam White's own radio show
right.
on campus. So
right.
her saying Dear White People, it comes in the context of the movie with her saying it on the radio show.
Right.
Yeah.
And so her last episode of Dear White People is Dear White People, never mind. You know, which means she no longer feels the need to perform for her fellow black students, and she no longer feels the need to define herself in relationship to the white people. She's just like, okay, I've figured out, or I'm on the path to choosing who I am, rather than, you know, sort of reacting to one way or the other. And so I thought that was good, the way he sort of explored the, you know, the motivations of the people who were doing the whole Dear White People thing, because I always questioned it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, you know, the movie is called Dear White People, but all the white people in the movie are somewhat static.
Yeah.
You know, they're not really dynamic characters, which is fine. We've been doing it to y'all for, you know, hundreds of years. So
yeah.
Turnabout's fair play. But, you know, the movie isn't really about necessarily lecturing to white people and changing their mind. It's about being, as he says, the black face in the white space and finding yourself.
Right. And so let's backtrack a little bit, because he's doing a lot here for a first-time director.
Yeah.
Like, this is a multi-protagonist film. There are four, like, main characters within the story, each one struggles with their own version of identity and what it means to be, quote unquote, the black face in the white space. There's Sam White, as we mentioned, who I think at one point someone calls, like, if Oprah and
Spike Lee had a pissed off baby. She's a Lisa Bonet wannabe.
Yeah. All of these.
Angry. Yeah. So she's taking sort of the black militant angle.
Yeah.
She's trying on that costume.
Mm-hmm.
There's Troy.
Troy, who's the dean's son. The dean is played by Dennis Haysbert.
Right.
And Troy is, he's kind of the very good-looking, classically handsome black male who primarily hangs out and dates his white peers, really wants to get on the pastiche, like kind of like the Harvard Lampoon type newspaper of his, of the school. And then there is also...
There's Coco.
Coco.
Who's from the south side of Chicago, whose real name is Calandra, I think.
Calandria. There's a weird moment where going a little bit out of order, but there's a weird moment where her and Troy are talking about her name, and she says something like, well, Calandria is like a ghetto name, so like I call myself Coco. And I was like, Coco isn't better.
Yeah,
Coco is not better.
Coco is
a stripper's name or
Coco is a stripper's name. It's Ice-T's, you know, booty wife. Yeah, if you're trying to like sort of middle class yourself and de-ghettoize yourself, as she would say, you know, Coco's not the way to go. But then I think maybe that's intentional.
Yeah,
because people who come from the wrong here's just an example from the cover of my book. It's from my 3-year-old preschool class photo, and all the white kids are wearing like snotty t-shirts and their hair is all messed up, and it's like, and there's one black kid in the background and he's wearing a suit. Because his mom like dressed him up a little too much.
Yeah.
To, you know, you're going to impress everyone, but she did it a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of whether you're the white trash going to the country club for the first time or the black person going to the Ivy League school,
right.
You're
going
to do it a little bit wrong.
Exactly.
So it's wrong, but it's accurate in its wrongness, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah. And then finally we have Lionel. Played by Tyler James Williams, who most people will probably recognize from Everybody Hates Chris. And he plays a kind of the social misfit. He's gay, scrawny. No one seems to like him, no one white or black. He can't fit in anywhere. And he's an aspiring journalist.
Right.
And he's kind of assigned to be like the black voice of the journal of the newspaper to try and get like a scoop on all of the stuff that Sam is kind of starting. And
right.
So.
Right. But the white people who give him that assignment have no idea that he's just not even accepted by the black students.
Right.
They don't know.
Right. Exactly. Assign him because they think he has an in.
And I think that was an interesting continuum in the sense that everyone in this movie is sort of an archetype. You know, Sam is taking the very defined, you know, militant idea, this is blackness, and Lionel's taking the I have no identity or I don't want to necessarily choose an identity kind of way. And Coco and Troy are sort of in the middle, and they're playing with a lot of shifting identities, and they try on lots of different costumes as the story goes on.
Yeah.
But you're right that he definitely tried to do a lot. One of the things that I felt sort of like jarring about it, and you can see it sort of in the genesis of it as a Twitter, you know, he said the original treatment was like just 90 pages of anecdotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, so for the first half, you know, 40 minutes, so it's very vignette-y, like the scene outside the movie theater where they're trying to get, you know, we don't want to see a Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah, the Spike Lee do the right thing moment. It's
right.
Very reminiscent of the white guy in the Larry Bird jersey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the tip test where Lionel's at the student union or whatever, and it's sort of like a bing, we're going to do a little like, break the fourth wall sketch moment.
Yeah, it felt a little out of place.
It was, yeah. So I think it started off with a bunch of like vignettes and then sort of, you know, merged into a narrative as it went on. But he just, I read an interview with him where he said, you know, it's a little loose-ended and messy kind of on purpose because I just wanted to throw a bunch of stuff in there to get people thinking.
Well, I definitely got that feeling throughout. And I think that may be why the movie didn't quite land for me, because just the way in which, like, I completely am on board with pretty much all of his politics. I align with the tone of the film and everything that's said, or most of the things that are said by Sam White or said by all these characters. Like, at one point, Lionel is talking about, like, oh, when I was in high school, like, black kids didn't like me, or I wasn't, like, it was hard for me to fit in. And, like, I could relate to that. Like, I personally could relate to that because I knew what it was like to go be in high school and kind of feel like an outcast in every sort of way. But then at the same time, I felt like a lot of times it felt very didactic or just kind of like too ripped from the headlines, and it didn't feel artfully done. It Right. felt like it's a lot of talking, a lot of speechifying, and everyone's talking at each other but not really to each other. And like, maybe that's the way it works in YouTube comments, but I feel like if you're Right. going to try and bring that into the real world, it needs to be a little bit...
Well, you sort of got the impression it's like, okay, Hollywood's only going to let us do one of these.
Exactly.
So we got to put everything in.
Right. That, and it definitely felt like that. And I also felt like it that translated to having four characters too. To me, I think it would have worked better if it was even just three, because I feel like...
Three is a good dramatic number.
Yeah.
Four is a lot.
Too much, especially for a first-time director and writer. And I feel like Troy and Coco could have been one character. Like, they kind of round out. Sam and Lionel are very distinct and very different. Mm-hmm. And then Troy and Coco kind of have the same thing going on, where they're both trying to work with the pastiche guys and get them to,
right.
Have that. They wind up having that climactic Halloween party in part because of both of their input.
Right.
And they both, like, deal with being... And I get there were moments where they were together and they kind of saw eye to eye, but I just felt like that could have been... put into one character instead of... And the reality show storyline felt very tacked on to me.
I like the idea behind it, which is that, you know, in terms of our national conversation about race or the, you know, whatever, everyone's performing to a degree.
Right.
And so, then again, that just felt like another thing layered on.
Exactly.
The other thing that I really, really wanted to see that just sort of was introduced and then sort of went nowhere was... part of Sam's motivation, she has this Dear White People radio show, but then she's running for head of house for Armstrong Parker, which is the black house. One thing we surprised is, you know, it's one of those residential colleges where everybody lives in a different house, and they're all based on, like, the liberal arts or the rich, you know, country club kids. And,
right.
And then, of course, there's the black, you know, multicultural house. And so one of her motivations is they just passed this Randomization of Student Housing Act, which is going to sort of break up, you know, the cliquishness of these things and just put everybody in a different house to have a more democratized environment, which, you know, she sees as a threat to, you know, the black culture on campus, that they're, you know, they're trying to destroy us because they feel threatened by us, which I don't think necessarily the president really feels threatened by the students of the black house. It's just sort of he's just, you know. And so that, to me, I thought, well, this is going to set up a real confrontation over this idea of integration and, you know, or versus, you know, multicultural cliquishness. And there's going to be a big debate and confrontation over that. And then there wasn't.
No. Well, there sort of was.
Well, there
when they have the lunch, when they're in the dining hall.
Right.
And the president's son... who we should also point out, there's like all these characters are interconnected in some way. The president's son is also the brother of the girl that Troy is dating, and that causes a little bit of conflict. And the president and the dean both went to college together, so there's that right. kind of background.
Right.
But anyway, the son, whose name is Kurt, he's pretty much a tool. Like, he's an absolute tool.
Right.
And he's terribly mean to Lionel. Lionel begins the movie living in the dorm with the pastiche guys, and is trying to arrange with the dean to move out because he's getting harassed there, and because he's gay and black. Kurt and Sam have this big kind of. I think it's supposed to be very. You know, back and forth, heated debate that kind of just fell flat for me because, again, it's one of those scenes.
Nobody talks that way.
No one talked. It was all like very like, well, granted, it's all these things that I've seen on YouTube comments and I've seen like under any article about race where like the Kurt says something like, well, Sam wants them to leave the dining room. And Kurt says something like, well, I should be able to stay here. Like, and then he gets into this diatribe about affirmative action and why, like, why he should be here. And then she's like, well, you're like, Fox News already tells us what we have to do. Like, it's just so, it feels so stilted. And I get that, like, part of the, and I'm seeing this in the reactions on Twitter and the people who are very excited to see this movie, people like myself who are like black millennials, young people who have gone to white institutions. And I see that that's supposed to be a moment for us, quote unquote, where we're supposed to like nod our head in agreement and be like, yeah, like this is us. Like this is what we, this is how we feel. But it didn't translate as anything more than just like, okay, yeah, these things are all true, but this does not feel real in any way, like in terms of the way they are arguing about it in real life.
Right. And from what I know of white people, we're not going to go into the black. I mean, any jokes about chicken and waffles that we're going to make, you're not going to be around.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But if we go to the Black House, you know, we're not going to stand up, and it's just unlikely, you know. And so the problem is he's trying to do, again, too many things. Is it a narrative-driven, realistic movie, or is it sort of a
satire?
Satire. And, you know, you can't be both. If you're Dr. Strangelove, then everyone's a type, and it's all about the satire, and there's no real emotional development or growth of the characters. It's just satire. But he's trying to layer one on top of the other. There are plot threads that are picked up, like the housing thing that, you know, is never really, it's like, oh, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's never really confronted.
One of the things that stood out to me was, obviously, as we talked about before, it's not just directed at white people. I think there's also kind of this inner friction between black people that's exposed. At one point, there's a moment where Sam, whose friend Reggie, I believe it is, who's like her like right-hand man, she's kind of seeing him or at least just screwing him.
Right.
But like he's also the guy who like wants her to be like their Angela Davis, like lead us, like lead this revolution. And there's a moment where they're like sitting around hanging out and smoking weed, or he's smoking weed, and she's like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't Friday. Like, you need to like, don't give into like these stereotypes. Like there's these little moments where like they're jabbing at each other. And there's even the moment where Lionel is in the dining room and Reggie and them come up to him and they're like, what are you doing here? Like, you're not supposed to be here. And he says something like, well, you guys like never really like I listen to these things and you don't. And one of them's like, actually, I love that. And it's just this weird kind of like inner turmoil, inner dynamic. Like, did you make anything of that? Like, did you?
I thought honestly that was the best part of the movie. You know, the one of the guys I know from advertising from that I met through writing my book, the way he described it is the problem with white racism isn't that it's so like devious and nefarious and evil. It's that it's so boring and it's just the same. And that's part of what the Dear White People thing is. All right, listen up. Stop touching our hair. You know, stop claiming you have so many black friends, because white people do the same dumb shit over and over and over and over and over and over again. And so that in itself is not, it's a very, we understand that dynamic and we've seen it and it's very simple. And the way he described it was that, you know, working at a white ad agency or getting through a predominantly white college is like, you know, you're swimming against the current because there's this huge current coming against you. But, you know, it's difficult, but it's very simple. You're just trudging against the current. But the inter-black politics or the intra-black politics are like a riptide that's cutting at your feet while you're trying to move against this current that's pressing on you and forcing you to, you know, work twice as hard to get where you're going. And so a lot of the jokes about the white people, and maybe I'm just going to come off as a humorous white people who doesn't like making fun of white people, but like I felt like a lot of the jokes about the white people we've heard before because people have been doing that same stupid shit. I was looking at the part of what this reminded me of was like Higher Learning, which is that John Singleton movie about college from like 1995. It's 20 years old and like the same shit, the dorm where the cops come and they harass the black kids, but not the white kids or whatever.
Right.
But like the same things happen in that movie, or a lot of the same things that happen in this movie. It's been 20 years and white people are still doing the same shit. So it's like, all right, well, I've seen those beats before, but sort of, because there's only ever one black person in a movie and she's the sassy black roommate and she has no character development in, you know, 90% of Hollywood films, what we don't see or what's new is the sort of the intra-black politics of identity of you're too black, you're not black enough, you know, and so on and so forth. So I thought that was like the most refreshing and interesting part of the movie.
Yeah. For me, I think it emphasized too much the fact that there is this kind of myth that there are people who think you're too whatever if you are a black person. The scene where Troy and Lionel, now they like share a, I guess, a suite. So they have two different rooms, and Troy is sitting and he's like watching like the sci-fi channel, like Star Trek, and like Lionel looks over and he's like, you watch, looks at him as if to say like, you're watching Star Trek. And then he like changed the channel really quickly and it was like,
right,
I'm watching football now or basketball or whatever. And to me, and then there's the whole scene later on with Sam and her white guy who she's dating, having sex with or whatever, where he says, they go back and forth, which I actually thought was kind of funny, where he's like, you listen to Taylor Swift, and but you don't, like, you don't know anything about this or this. And he makes like a reference to Coming to America and she has no idea what it is.
Right.
And I was like, okay, yes, like these things exist. There are people who, black people who only listen to these things. But I feel like most people, especially black people, especially nowadays, most of us want to try to put forth, and I think even if we don't want to try, we're doing it anyway, put forth this idea that we can listen to both things. Like,
right.
It's
right.
Not an either or. And I feel like the movie kind of hints that that's the case, especially since Sam winds up just completely leaving behind like her old past to date the white guy. Like, there's just, I think the last scene we see with her and Reggie and like the other rebels is like when, after she's given this another speech about like
right.
her childhood, and then they decide to be together and they walk by and her old friends look back and they're like, what is she doing? And it's like, I don't really think that's the way things really are most of the time.
No. And again, it goes back to the whole public performance thing. Like, you know, again, just take it back to the advertising thing I researched, you know, again, in the comments section, when you go through and read about all the articles and the diversity blogs and advertising, it's, you know, it's vicious. So-and-so, she can't take the handkerchief off her head and this kind of stuff. But do people really sit and do that in private and have those sort of, you know, recriminating conversations that are very specifically about, you know, friends or Taylor Swift or you know, policing?
Right.
You know, those cultural identity lines get policed in sort of like a general way, but you're right. I mean, do people actually sit and have those conversations, or am I going to be embarrassed if my black friend sees me watching Star Trek? Not really.
No.
Not really. But I think, you know, what I did like the way it ended with Sam's resolution, not only was saying, dear white people, never mind, just like, you know, whatever with you people. But, you know, while there was no big confrontation over the Housing Act, she sort of resolves the question for herself, because she's like, well, are you going to live in the Black House or the White House? She said, well, I got an apartment off campus.
Right.
And that's really sort of the answer to the whole question is, are you going to live in the Black House? Society wants you to put you in the Black House or the White House. And the answer is, get an apartment off campus.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, it reminded me of something that Lerone Bennett said about Roland, the editor of Ebony, for Slate readers who might not be aware. He said, you know, the integrationist is overly obsessed with the presence of the white man. The separationist is overly obsessed with the absence of the white man. But the liberationist merely says that the absence or presence of the white man is irrelevant, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you go your own way and do your own thing. And that's sort of where she ends up. And so I like where the movie started and I like where it ended. But there was just a whole lot in between going on. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's certainly an enjoyable movie and everyone should go see it, if only because it is a little, you know, it might be a little too didactic or whatever, but, you know, maybe Hollywood needs that, you know. And again, it sort of reminds me of, it was a discussion that Dana and Steven and Julia had about Boyhood, when that movie, and it was like, oh my God, this movie's so good. It's so revolutionary. And I think it was Stephen Metcalf said, well, are we saying that?
I think that was Julia. Yeah, I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, are we saying that because this is really a great movie, or, you know, we don't have any other movies where they age a boy 12 years to compare it against,
right?
And it's so like, well, is Dear White People the best movie you could ever make about identity politics on a college campus, or is it the only one?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we don't really, you know, we need to see 12 more of these movies to see, all right, well, this one really did it well. Or that, you know, we can compare Porky's and Animal House and, you know, like 10 of those different movies to say, well, Animal House is really sort of the best one and the rest are derivative.
Right.
Right. We don't have any, you know, cultural comparisons to this. I mean, you could compare it to School Days, I guess, but that's it's so different.
Yeah.
It's such a different era and different time.
I mean, the only movie I rewatched recently, Hollywood Shuffle, because I just felt like, well, if I'm going to watch something and kind of look at it through that lens, like, what's the closest thing? And, like, this felt like one of the closest things I could have watched. Hollywood Shuffle is from, I think, the late 80s. It's directed by Robert Townsend, stars Robert Townsend, and is about his experiences as a black actor and always being just confronted with these very stereotypical roles. And that, to me, is, like, the thing about Dear White People is that it's billed as a satire and it's marketed itself as a satire, but I think it's, like we talked about earlier, it gets so serious at times that like it doesn't necessarily feel all that fun or funny.
Right.
Whereas something like Hollywood Shuffle, I mean, the last like third of it turns very kind of moralistic and does direct address thing. Like, you need to choose, like, do you want to feel good about the roles you choose? Like, you should. But the first two-thirds of it are very, like, biting, sarcastic, funny.
Everything's funny in that movie.
Yeah.
That movie doesn't miss a mark. It's just funny all the way down the line.
Right.
And every point is made through humor.
Right.
Whereas in this movie, a lot of the points are made through humor. Some of them are made through speeches. And so it goes up and down like that.
Yeah. I just wanted to really quick touch on the kind of climactic scene, which is the biggest scene, which winds up being this Halloween party, which is kind of actually put into place in part due to Troy and Coco wanting to work with Pastiche and coming up with the idea to have like a unleash your inner Negro, I think is what they call it, party. And the moment comes, there's all these white kids who are dressed up in typical quote-unquote ghetto or urban wear. There's blackface going on. There's monkey faces. There's Obama, Michelle masks, that kind of thing. And it kind of leads not only the black kids, but also all the other, like, non-white student groups to come and, like, descend on the party and break it up.
Who we haven't seen, by the way, until this point. There's just Chinese, and I don't think we even see the Hispanic people. They're just referenced. But there's one Asian girl at the Black Student Union meeting. Because they have better food or what?
Yeah,
was it?
Yeah, you guys have better snacks or something.
Yeah, you guys have better snacks.
What did you, because that was yet another kind of very topical thing that was thrown in here. And I think it was handled pretty well for the most part. I mean, what did you think?
I thought it was handled very well. And I think one of the things I liked about it was, you know, these white kids are showing up, you know, just thinking it's just, hey, we're having fun, Jay-Z, you know, hip-hop party, whatever. But it's filmed in a way that it's really somewhat menacing.
Yeah.
These strobe light effects with these blackface masks, you know, just sort of like distorted in this like harsh light.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of gets to the where, you know, a black person in that environment, you know, not only wouldn't feel it was funny, but would feel not so unsubtly threatened by the whole atmosphere of it.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was really well done, but again, going with sort of the inconsistencies and tone of the movie, that belonged in a really black satire almost, you know?
Yeah.
You could see if this was a really, really dark, dark, you know, black comedy kind of thing. So it was a little bit of shift in tone there, but I did think it worked really well. And it is astonishing that things like that are still done, you know? My college, we at Tulane 20 years ago, we had they still had the old South parties where the white fraternity would dress up in their Confederate grays and the ladies would wear like cotillion dresses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still do it. I'm sure that they do. but, you know, so I know what did you think of it? I thought it was
I thought it was great, too, especially the moment when Lionel was at the party with his kind of his boss at the newspaper. He goes there with him, and he has a crush on his boss, and they start flirting. And so, and by boss, I mean, like, this guy is, like, a senior and he's, like, a freshman, not, like, actual, like, teacher,
employer.
Student.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
So, like, his editor. And they start making out, and Lionel, who's constantly teased for, like, this very unruly afro, he says something like, oh, like, I think I want to cut it all off. And the guy is like, don't you dare. And it's like, okay, like, you clearly are fed it. And then he says, right after that, he says something like, I love you. Like, I could eat you like a Hershey's or something. It's like the most, like, it's the worst thing in the world. But I have been told that before. And it's very something along those lines. So I've not quite Hershey's, but similar chocolate, whatever.
Right.
So
it wasn't flattering.
I went home with him after that. But it was there's a moment when they're right after he says that they start after he hears him say that they start making out, and then all Lionel sees, like, it intercuts with, like, him seeing, like, monkey masks. And to me, that was, like, really effective. Like, I liked that kind of dark existential crisis he was kind of going through as this was happening. Like, that part really worked for me. I agree with you. It does kind of work in a different movie. But I think it also, to me, that was, like, the best overall piece in the movie.
Yeah, no, and I thought it was... I agree. I think it worked very well. It was a good climax. I didn't quite understand why was Troy writing the invitation? Why did Troy, the student politician, want to be part of a humor magazine? That didn't quite make sense to me. It was just a lot happening. But that scene in and of itself was, I think, effective and shows you just how ridiculous it is that these parties still keep going. In fact, I read one interview with him. That was the original climax of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took it out because he thought, it's too crazy. It's too unrealistic. It's too heightened reality. And then he started reading, like, more and more. It's like, wait, this stuff still does go on all the time.
I mean, there was just a couple weeks ago a clip that went around of people doing that stuff. Like, and it happened when I was in undergrad at least once. I remember I went to Northwestern and I was there between 05 and 09, and I remember it happening at least once.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing is, and here's where you sort of run into an interesting issue, which is that, like, okay, this party makes fun of something topical that's going on campus every year, right? You know, and Sam's movement sort of maybe, you know, merits a bit of satire or a bit of, you know, ridicule from students in that it is so, it's the main self-serious thing that's going on campus right at that moment. You know, but the only people with a satirizing platform are these racist white guys.
Right.
So there's no one to do an intelligent satire of what Sam is doing, except for maybe Justin Simeon, who's sort of like, you know, exploring the issue in this movie.
Yeah.
So if you had, if you lived in a different world, you know, and the white people say, well, we're just making fun of what's going on campus. But at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, but you don't know how to make fun of that. It's not that you can't make fun of that.
Right.
It's that you don't know how to do it well.
Exactly.
So maybe you just shouldn't.
Yeah. So last thoughts. What do you think of Simeon? What do you think of his future as a filmmaker?
I think he has a good one. I think if I got a chance to make a first-time feature, I would, you know, hope it's as good as this one. You know, I think it's probably difficult to pull all this sort of thing together if you're a first-time filmmaker. I don't know. I've never made a film. But I think he's got enough good ideas and enough talent. I'd like to see what he could do given the chance to sort of, you know, if you tell him, all right, Justin, you've got a 5-picture deal, you can make 5 different movies. You don't have to put all of them in the same movie. I think he'd make really good movies.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think he shows a lot of talent, and considering that this was very much a grassroots project, it was crowdfunded and it's grown in support. I think I'm really curious to see what he does with his career, and I'm looking forward to it.
And I just hope it's successful so that, again, more of these movies can get funded and made.
Yeah, the more we have, the more representative less representative they will be of Black culture individually. And I think that's a great thing to aspire to in Hollywood. So
thank you.
Thank you. The producer of this podcast is Chris Wade. The exec producer of Slate Podcast is Andy Bowers. And for Slate.com, this is Aisha Harris.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.